Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
And welcome back. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When Magic Man took the stage, along with more than 20 other bands, at the Boston Calling Music Festival in May, it signaled a big step for the city's local art scene.
When it comes to the arts, the city has come a long way since poet E.E. Cummings once advised the young American novelist John Cheever to, quote, "Get out of Boston," he said. "It's a city without springboards for people who can't dive."
Boston, of course, has long been home to the vaunted Museum of Fine Arts, the Gardner, the Boston Ballet, and the BSO. But now there are signs of a younger, edgier art scene, such as Boston Calling, an open-air music festival right in the heart of City Hall Plaza.
But artists and proponents of the arts would like to see the city go farther. So would Mayor Marty Walsh, who's about to appoint the city's first cabinet-level arts and cultural affairs commissioner in 20 years. The arts czar would be responsible for designing a citywide vision and plan for promoting and supporting the arts and artists in Boston.
So how would he or she do that? What are the obstacles that have prevented the city from becoming an urban arts mecca? And who should the mayor pick for this job? In a moment, we'll explore all of that with some people who know a lot about the art scene in Boston. But first, Joyce Linehan is with us. She has a deep background in the arts in Boston as well. She's also Mayor Marty Walsh's chief of policy. And Joyce, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thanks. Hi, Anthony. Hi, Meghna.
Hey there. So tell us what the Arts and Cultural Affairs Commissioner would do once the mayor picks him or her.
Well, I think a lot of people probably saw the job description, and right under must walk on water, I think it was very clear that this person would have to have a fair amount of fundraising prowess. And they would have to have the ability to see how we can break down the silos, work across the departments to make sure that the arts are part of all of the different policy areas, which the mayor is very committed to doing.
All right. Well, what kind of person would be best prepared for this position? I mean, a museum curator, a museum manager, an artist? I mean, you mentioned fundraising, so obviously someone with fundraising prowess. I mean, what's your idea of who the ideal candidate would be?
Well, I don't want to limit myself to thinking about it in those terms, or limit the folks who are looking at this to thinking about it in those terms. I mean, I think there could be a range of experience. As somebody who is a non-traditional chief of policy, I like to think that we can be a little bit open to a non-traditional approach. But the most important thing is that this person have a lot of vision, that they be collaborative, as the mayor is, that they understand that there are lots of voices that need to be heard, that they understand how to make people who are not necessarily arts people speak the language of arts. It's a really, really big job, and it's a really exciting time. It definitely feels like a moment in Boston.
Tell me more about that moment, because you've been involved in the art scene in Boston for many years. You've been involved in the arts yourself, Joyce. So, I mean, how have you seen the scene changed over the years? Where are we? Where would, you know, what would this art czar be? What's the scene that this arts czar would be joining and leading?
Well, there's just so much going on, from the very large institutions to the very small neighborhood arts groups. And I think that in the last 15 years or so, we've become very adept at making the case for the arts based on economic development, and that's great. And I think that we have an opportunity here to make the case for art's sake, for arts in the way that they inform issues like public safety and public health, and even transportation and public works. We've come to recognize that arts and tourism is the third or fourth largest industry in Boston, depending on which study you look at, and then it's just time to celebrate that and try to make it easier for the arts to want to stay in Boston. E.E. Cummings, that's just nonsense, and Edgar Allan Poe said similar, so we want to kind of put that to bed.
We want to put that to bed for good,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
And move forward.
Yep.
All right, well, Joyce Linehan, stick with us. She's the chief of policy for Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Listeners, we're talking about what you would like to see in a new arts czar in Boston. What should the arts czar be focusing on? If you're an artist, what does the city need to do to be more arts friendly? What's holding the city back, if anything at all, is holding it back toward taking the next step? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Especially if you're an artist, we'd love to hear from you and about your view of this city. And let me introduce a couple of other people who have been thinking a lot about this. Greg Cook is an arts critic and reporter for WBUR's The Artery. He also reviews for the Providence Phoenix newspaper. And Greg Cook, good to have you in.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Wilson is the chief executive of Mass Creative, an advocacy organization for the arts and cultural community across the state. Matt, good to have you.
Good to be here.
So I want to start with you, Greg Cook, and Joyce Linehan. I don't want to put you on the spot here. And last November, Greg Cook, you were speculating about what kind of candidate would be great for this arts czar. And you actually mentioned Joyce Linehan.
Joyce Linehan would be great. But she already has a job.
She already has a job.
Live in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a great sign that Joyce is there. I think it really shows, like, it was really promising about where the city is going and shows how, you know, somebody like Joyce, who's both politically engaged and involved with the arts and has a sense of both, like, how art can be both meaningful but also really playful, to have that person near the top is really, you know, a great thing right now.
Yeah. So because Joyce has a job, as we mentioned, she's chief of policy, who else? Who? Or let's talk about what kind of person do you think would best fit that role?
I mean, I think one is we want somebody who's an ambassador for what we do already and can really help people connect here with what we're doing. Again, I think we need somebody who can really connect both meaning but also play. I think we often, there's a feeling we can't do things here, or we're too strict here, or it's not, I don't know, you know, it's not, it's sort of, it's not official enough or something. And I think there's also something that, if you go back to the founding of the state, John Adams wrote in the Constitution that it's the duty of our state government to support the arts, because he argued in our Constitution that we need the wisdom, knowledge, and virtue that the arts give us, and that we need that because we're in a democracy, and if we're going to run this place, the arts help us sort of think better and think more deeply about what is important in our society and how to engage with these big issues.
Yeah.
So I think we need somebody who can help bring that to our committee.
So Matt Wilson, let me, same question to you. I mean, what kind of person are we looking for here?
Well, I think the first thing is that it's just great to be talking about this. During the mayor's election last fall, Marty was definitely out front on this. He was the first person of all the candidates to say we need a cabinet level position for the arts. And then over the next few months, he came out with a fairly ambitious platform on what to do. So I agree with Joyce that this person does need to walk on water, but there's a arts czar really needs the skill to implement the mayor's plan. And it's a combination of some of the things that we've been talking about. It's developing a long-term plan of what the cultural ecosystem in here in Boston should look like. It's raising money. The mayor was basically left with Boston really at the bottom of the barrel as far as cities who fund the arts. For Boston to be at a comparable level of other cities, they should be spending $6 to $8 million a year. And right now we spend hardly nothing. So how do we raise the money? And then I think third is, how do you manage the city bureaucracy? I think there's a lot of artists, there's a lot of institutions that have been frustrated with just the roadblocks that are put up over the past 20 years to do public art, to put on exhibitions. It's just, it's arcane and it's frustrating. And, you know, the community is definitely looking for the administration and the policy director to be able to cut through that bureaucracy and kind of let it go.
Well, Joyce, let me throw a couple of those ideas that Matt just brought up. I was reading a really interesting piece by Yvonne Abraham not long ago in the Boston Globe, and she was talking about the need, the desire to create public art in Boston. And she said, for a long time, upstream has been the only way to paddle when it comes to making public art in Boston. Witness, for example, the Bartlett Bus Yard, a vacant former transportation hub in Roxbury. Festival organizers who wanted to turn the place into an art-filled temporary performance space last summer required superhuman tenacity and at times psychic powers to go up against a permitting system designed by Kafka on a bad day. So she laid out a challenge there. Is that some of the sort of challenge that Mayor Walsh wants to take on?
That... Yeah, I think Yvonne undersold that one. It was actually harder than she described. we're fixing it. We're absolutely fixing it. In fact, I was at a city council hearing yesterday called by Councillor Presley and Councillor Wu about an art gallery that just discovered that an art gallery is apparently not an allowed use on Newbury Street.
Yeah.
So we have to fix that. We're just discovering, you know, a lot of pieces of the code that are that need to be updated, that need to be fixed. We have a great new ISD commissioner. And
ISD commissioner, remind us what that is. What does that stand for?
I'm sorry, Inspectional Services.
Gotcha.
Figure pretty heavily into something like this. And he's looking at all of that. We're going to get to the point where it's going to be clear how you go about doing these things, and you're not going to have somebody's cell phone number to get it done. So we're looking forward to that. It's going to take us a little bit of time, and if people are experiencing those kinds of frustrations, like to hear from them, because what's been very helpful is when people come to us with a very specific set of things they have to go through that they probably shouldn't, that we can then do a post-mortem with all of the departments involved and figure out where we're doing it wrong. So that's in process.
All right. Great, Cook. I'd love to sort of get your take on what we were just talking about, this sort of bureaucratic challenge, I guess, mm-hmm. that Joyce Linehan indicates that the mayor is really open to sort of easing. How is that gumming up the works out there?
I think things are moving, as Joyce said. You hear consistently people feeling frustrated by the difficulty of permitting to do anything. I mean, to open a bar with music, to do a public art project, to do a community thing, you know, something free in the parks. But I am hearing movement. I think that the city's actively working on things like the public space invitational they did to do more kind of lower cost, quicker, affordable projects. There's a feeling, I think, sometimes that we need to have things perfect or we need to be very careful. And I think often that means we become boring instead of being exciting. And I think I wish there was a way for us to fail spectacularly rather than fail by being dull.
You mean take some chances, in other words?
Yeah, I think part of that permitting process is rightfully to have the democratic process and make sure we don't, you know, things aren't dangerous or that sort of thing. But I think there's a way we could do more exciting things while still, you know.
Give me an example. What are you thinking of, for example? A sort of exciting arts project that might be a little edgy, a little chancy, that might be sort of tricky to push out and push online.
Things I would look at from models here are, for example, things that are already happening is like the Honk Festival in Cambridge and Somerville, which has been incredible. And, you know, this crazy, wacko music festival that's actually a huge local success, a great party here, and has been copycatted all over the country and even internationally. And I think we often don't recognize there are incredible, successful models here. And that's done, it seems to be, I mean, another example in Somerville, and I don't, you know, Somerville's doing great things right now with their arts commission. Just recently, the Porch Fest there, which is basically anybody who wanted to could play music on their porch, and anybody could go see it.
This is a weekend-wide event where you can just stroll around the neighborhood, and sort of every other porch that you come to, there's a live band playing on it. Really nice neighborhood event.
It was incredible. There was like 200 different musicians or bands, and thousands of people went. And the city, I mean, they put up a website. I'm not sure what the cost was for them, you know. And so it's again, it doesn't necessarily. I mean, money is really important, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also there's ways to do things, you know, by you know. Cheap, fleet-footed stuff.
Joyce, you know, another thing I wanted to come back to you, and again, earlier in the segment, Matt talked about this, funding for the arts. I mean, let's say we get a terrific arts commissioner. What kind of funding will that person have behind him or her, and what's the city sort of thinking about in terms of putting more money into the arts coffers?
Just one aside, there is a Jamaica Plain Porch Fest sometime this summer, so we've stolen that idea and it's coming to Boston.
Oh, that's exciting. That. Glad to hear that.
But in terms of funding, we need to work toward that. We need to work toward a dedicated revenue stream. That's going to be very important. In the meantime, we're going to need to raise money. We're going to need to develop public-private partnerships that will help us get there. We need to get a person in here who's able to make the case, who's able to really dig in and stand that ground and make the argument for why the arts need to be funded. The mayor in the FY15 budget did double the money. He's matching the grants that we get from the Mass Cultural Council for the Boston Cultural Council. So that will effectively double the amount of money that we have to grant to small arts organizations. It's a small amount of money in the scheme of things, but symbolically, it really does mean something, because it's going to mean the difference between someone who can have an open studios or not have an open studios, and that's the kind of commitment that he's showing out of the box. And so I'm excited for what happens in the FY16 budget.
Well, I'd love to get some listeners in this conversation. We've got a lot of folks who have called in. Listeners, we're talking about the future of the art scene in Boston and what a new art czar in Boston could bring to the table. If you're an artist, what does the city need to do to be more arts friendly? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Holly, who's calling from Brighton. Holly, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, thanks. So what I wanted to say is that for well-established and wealthier artists, Boston can be a wonderful place to work. But for younger, poorer, or not full-time artists, finding studio space is just literally impossible at a reasonable cost. And very honestly, I don't really see that changing. So what I would like is for Boston to recognize that disability and be a hub, but recognize that many of the artists who would love to be in Boston are in fact down in Rockland, in New Bedford, in even in Providence, up in Lowell on the North Shore. You know, we are not in Boston. Even Boston residents travel outside of Boston to find affordable studio space. So if Boston could do more to really be a cultural center, but recognize that you have to reach out to the rest of Eastern Massachusetts.
Interesting. Holly, I'm really glad you put this on the table. And Matt, I feel like this is in your wheelhouse in the sense that Holly is talking about something statewide or sort of greater Boston-wide, not just citywide.
Right. There is a broader ecosystem that includes the whole Commonwealth and actually New England. And just as we did in Boston around the mayor's election, where we really worked hard to get arts and culture into the discussion and into the debate between the mayoral candidates, we're doing the same thing with the governor's race. We're going to have a new governor here in Massachusetts, and we're working with all the candidates really to have them develop bold and dynamic platforms, which, yes, uses Boston as a hub, but then uses all the great resources across the state, from the Berkshires to the Cape to the gateway cities, which together can really build a vibrant and connected Commonwealth.
And Joyce, you know, listening to Holly, we put out a question on our Facebook page. We heard from Reza Blattman. She wrote, please make sure that you talk about workspaces. We artists can't live or work in Boston and the surrounding cities and towns if we have nowhere to work. So what do you say to Holly? What can the city do? Or even take on Holly's suggestion that, you know, make Boston a hub and sort of acknowledge the fact that so many of the artists are all around the city and not in the city.
Yep. Well, I mean, we're looking at it. I mean, I got to say that, you know, when I first started inviting other cabinet chiefs here to the transition meetings that we were having, Sheila Dillon, who is the head of the Department of Neighborhood Development, was the first one there. She really understands the artist's housing issue. She understands the artist's workspace issue. It's a big part of the transition report. The transition team talked about that a lot. And if you want to go to the website, the Boston website, and read the transition report, you'll see it in there. It's definitely something that we're acutely aware of and working on. And, you know, we have space. There is space here in Boston. We're looking at all kinds of inventory to try to figure out what the best uses are. We've already helped a few people who were looking for spaces. It's definitely something that's in the works. So I feel confident that we're going to do better there.
Greg Cook, please.
It's not just about artist housing. It's housing for all of us. And I think that there's a report recently that we're like one of the five most expensive places to rent in the nation. And so this is like, I mean, this is. This is what Boston is, and we've got to deal with it. I think there are also some of the cities, Boston in particular, have done artist housing things. And I think there's a group that's forming right now sort of around this issue, and they're called the Getting By in Boston group. And they're holding a meeting tomorrow in Cambridge at Lesley University that sort of to begin to figure out how do we deal with this, like affordable low workspace, but and particularly for all of us, but also for arts creative stuff.
Mm. Let's take a couple more calls. Pat is calling from Alston. Pat, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. One thing I think is missing from this conversation is the opportunities for expression of the arts for young people. I've been living in Boston the last 10 years, but the previous 10 years of that were spent in the New Bedford area, which a previous caller had mentioned, which is, can be a hub for young people performing art. I had the opportunity in New Bedford during the early thousands to, there were clubs or AA halls or VFW halls where I could just rent out for the night, and my friends and I could play a show, and that really did build a community. And as a result of that, I ended up moving to Boston, bringing that community to Boston. There was a whole Boston community surrounded by the band I was playing in. And from that, I was able to travel the entire world. And, you know, it really just was a great experience growing up in New Bedford and being able to be 14 or 15 and have a place to express myself artistically. And that's the type of thing that I think needs to really take place in Boston, because as far as I know, there is literally nowhere to play in the actual Boston area. It's always going to Cambridge or going outside or to Quincy. The young people of Boston have no place to really express themselves.
Got it, Pat. Thanks for putting that on the table. Matt Wilson, how would you respond to what Pat's talking about there?
I mean, I think that calls for really for the city to take a step back and look at the whole ecosystem and come out with some broader cultural plan and strategy on how to address all these issues. I think over the past few decades, the city government's approach has been pretty tactical. Let's do this here, that there. Let's take a step back. Let's bring the community together and really lay out what are the needs and what are the plans for us to get there. And I look at the new commissioner as key of doing that, of bringing together all these diverse interests from folks like the last caller to the big institutions, to the youth arts groups, to the individual artists. What is our vision and how do we make sure that the city provides the support and resources to make it flourish?
You know, listening to our last caller, I'm going to just read two Facebook comments. This one from Katrina Galore. More oddball art venues that feature a variety of performing arts, music, theater, dance, film, etc., rather than a single flavor, rock venue, symphony hall, etc. More live workspaces. Tim Devon writes, we need more egalitarian, creative venues, open calls, open bookings, more openness. So, Joyce, I'll come back to you. Yeah, please go ahead, Joyce.
So Katrina is wonderful. Her and her husband bought this long abandoned space in Four Corners in Dorchester.
Oh, you're talking about Katrina Galore, who I just read on Facebook.
Yeah, we're helping them try to work through all the Byzantine process that they have to get through to get situated there. So it's going to be a great space. I can't wait until they're operational. That's going to be wonderful. And to Pat's point, probably before he was born, I think I actually did the first all ages show that ever happened in the city of Boston back in the 80s. So I'm sensitive to that plight. And I would say that I'm going to throw it back to the people who want to produce shows. Come to us with a great idea. Come to us with a really good idea. Something that you want to do, with an idea about where you want to do it, and we will help you get it done.
There you go. There you have it. Listeners, artists, lovers of the arts, artists. You heard it from right there in the heart of City Hall. Bring the suggestions, the proposals, right to Joyce Linehan and to Mayor Marty Walsh, and we'll take it from there.
What T-stop is that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What T-stop is that?
What T-stop is that?
How do I find your office?
Joyce Linehan, I want to thank you for joining us for this important conversation. Thanks for playing ball with us.
Thanks for asking.
That's Joyce Linehan, Chief of Policy for the City of Boston. Matt Wilson, we have about a minute left, and Greg Cook, just sort of final word from both of you. If we could sort of see a big step, let's say in the next few months, year, that would really kind of indicate to you that Boston is moving in the right direction when it comes to the arts, what would it be?
Well, you can just hear it from hearing Joyce that the orientation has changed dramatically from the next administration. It's much more open, and their orientation is to do things and not to stop things. So I think it's really exciting when the new commissioner comes up. What is he or she going to do about bringing the community together, about loosening up the permitting process, and now about being a promoter, like using the bully pulpit to be out there, really celebrating and promoting all the great stuff that's going on here in Boston.
Greg Cook, last 10 seconds to you.
I mean, I think there's a diversity also. We need to remember diversity, and there's amazing things like the Caribbean Carnival Parade each August, which is just like the third biggest event in town. Incredible creativity. More things like that. I'd also say that, I mean, I think that the city, like Karen Goodfellow at the Boston Arts Commission and Joyce, are clearly doing work to make things easier, but we need to do stuff that's artist-driven projects, that we not just people asked to like illustrate Edgar Allan Poe's life, but actually finding the great ideas artists have and helping them happen the way people are talking about.
So. All right. Greg Cook, arts critic and reporter for WBUR's The Artery, and Matt Wilson, chief executive of Mass Creative. Thank you both for coming in. Listeners, stay with us. A lot more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty.